So you think that once again the church has always been like in the forefront of science in one sense and a correct understanding of science and in healthcare that the church needs to once again restate a lot or come out more clearly with some directives or guidance for.
Well, I think more specific guidance. The church has said very clearly you can't take organs out of living people on which they depend to live. Mm-hmm. And so that principle is there. The question is a question of fact, I suppose. Is this person living, and what constitutes being a living person in this particular issue? I think de facto, I'm not very sanguine that science is going to accept what the church says about anything. I mean, mm-hmm. the church says you can't chop up a human embryo for good purposes, but embryonic stem cell research is going forward and supported by scientists as well as by politicians who think, who don't think. And so there's something to be said for hope that the church's direction and guidance would help some people. But on the other hand, there are a lot of people who, no matter what, would ignore it and go their own way, dominated by some other kinds of drive that they have within them. Mm-hmm. There are certain things that are humanly repulsive, and consequently there can be public opinion can be roused against them. I mean, most people, although it's becoming more and more acceptable, most people are repelled by suicide or assisted suicide or mercy killing and so on. But there are people who want to do that. Daniel McGuire, who teaches theology at Marquette University, thinks that if parents have a challenged child, they should be able to kill the child up to 8 or 12 years of age. They just he certainly advocates that. Another advocate of infanticide is a man named Singer, who teaches at Princeton University. He has tenure there. So there are plenty of people who will sing another chorus if they have an opportunity to do that, and there are always people who will follow them.
Your Excellency, you know, with the last elections that we had, there were some many prominent Catholics who were also pro-abortion, publicly pro-abortion, and some people were wondering, you know, why aren't these people excommunicated? And sometimes you hear this, the refrain or the answer given, well, excommunication was something of the Middle Ages, and it doesn't mean anything to anybody these days and would have no effect. Do you think that's the proper way to view excommunication, and what is the reason for excommunicating someone in the first place?
Well, all the censures in the church, excommunication, interdict, whatever they are always meant to be medicinal. They're meant to bring the person to a realization of the peril in which his or her soul is. And the idea is to bring the person to repentance and to emphasize the particular heinousness or seriousness of a certain kind of act. So it's also has a secondary effect. The purpose of these kinds of ecclesiastical censures is to edify the rest of the faithful so that they understand that the church as a collectivity, as a body, is not indifferent to the horrors of what this particular thing might be. And therefore, that's one of the many reasons why, for the person's individual salvation as well as for the edification of everybody, notorious sinners who are unrepentant have to be refused Holy Communion. And this is simply very clear. I think Archbishop Burke has written an excellent monograph on it from the point of view of canon law. And I think theologically it's absolutely sound. So ecclesiastical censures and punishments, if you'd like, are meant to be medicinal. They're meant to correct the person and bring that person back to the right way. And so that's the reason they exist. Also, a certain sense in which there's a prevention of contamination of this person's ideas or something into the body of the church in an untoward way. But so that's always the hope. People are excommunicated. There are two kinds, as you know, of excommunications. There are those that are automatic and those that are imposed. Automatic excommunications use the Latin term late sententiae, and those imposed, ferendae sententiae. Excommunications can be imposed by executive decree by those in the church who have the authority to decree, and also by judicial decree. After a church trial, a person can be declared censured. Automatic things are attached to a law, so violation of that law automatically carries with it, the mortal sin of disobedience carries with it also this ecclesiastical penalty of excommunication. so people can be excommunicated for desecrating the Blessed Sacrament, for example. A horrible thing. If I deliberately desecrate the Blessed Sacrament, I commit a mortal sin, of course, a sacrilege, but I also am automatically excommunicated. And then some of the excommunications, either for rende sententiae or late sententiae, are what they call reserved. That particular one, desecration of the Blessed Sacrament, that mortal sin and the excommunication that's attached to it has to be absolved from the Holy See. So the ordinary priest can't, in confession, can't absolve one from that horror sin unless they're at the moment of death. And so there are other things too. The excommunication attached to deliberate procured abortion or the immediate participation in that kind of act is also reserved to the bishop. So it's the bishop who has the authority to give a priest the power to absolve from that excommunication and then consequently as well from the sin of abortion if a person were to confess that and be repentant for it. And so that's the basic thing about excommunication. All ecclesiastical censures, meant to be medicinal, meant to call someone back to a way of life that they've deserted, a following of Christ in a way that they've walked away from. It has some success, some doesn't. So it varies from circumstance to circumstance.
But do you think it's still a good thing to do if it's needed for a soul?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's in current church law, and it can be done. The bishop is a lawgiver of a diocese. He can make excommunicate both as through his tribunal or directly by executive decree, or he can make laws that attach with those kind of penalties attached to them. And so I don't. It's medieval simply in a sense that, you know, the Holy Eucharist, the sacraments, everything's medieval. It all comes through the Middle Ages to the from the time of Christ to us. But that it's reserved to the Middle Ages or it's something from a unenlightened age or something like that is absurd.
So the 21st century is still a time for using excommunications if seen to be.
Well, if necessary, I would say so, certainly, and church authorities have done that. As a matter of fact, just recently, the Holy See has added to the two sacraments, feigning two of the sacraments to which an excommunication is attached. It's a mortal sin to feign a sacrament, but were one to feign the sacrament of penance, reconciliation, or one to feign the Holy Eucharist, there is an automatic excommunication also attached to that crime. So it's not only a sin, a mortal sin, but it's also a crime. But added to that, now the Holy See has added feigning or faking the sacrament of holy orders, and specifically anyone who would attempt to be ordained, to ordain a woman or a woman who was attempting to be ordained would automatically be excommunicated. They'd commit a mortal sin, of course, but they would also, there's an automatic excommunication attached to that, an excommunication reserved to the Holy See.
Okay, Your Excellency, I want to thank you for this time, for answering these questions for me, and for giving the opportunity for our listeners to hear some sound teaching from a good shepherd.
You're very kind and welcome. I'm very happy that you're able to have a little conversation. Wonderful.
Thank you, Your Excellency.